Welcome to the Human Flourishing Project. I'm your host, Alex Epstein. This week's topic is called The Joy of Reverse Procrastination. The Joy of Reverse Procrastination. And to introduce this idea, I'll tell you about why I've been thinking about it recently. And in particular, it came up with what I would call my work obligations. So in the work that I do, I have certain work that is, let's say, more creative, more on my timetable. And in a sense, working on a book can sometimes be like that, or trying to think of new strategies, or different kinds of things. But there are certain things, such as delivering a speech or creating some messaging for a consulting client, that are very, very, that have very, very specific due dates on them. And over the years, I've gotten really, really good at meeting those due dates, and often meeting them by slotting in my work right before the due date or the deadline. And this has a bunch of benefits. So one benefit is that I have learned to focus a lot and get things done in a relatively small amount of time, because if I only leave myself a certain amount of time to do something, then I'm going to figure out more efficient ways to do it. And sometimes that can make me more easily overcome a problem than if I felt like I had all the time in the world. But over the last year, I've thought a lot about my experience of work and how to make it better. And in general, the more productive I've become in the market sense, where I can more and more support myself with work and afford different kinds of things that I want, I've become more and more sensitive to my experience of work and thinking about, okay, if I'm feeling a lot of tension, there's something off, because like my life isn't tense. This isn't the stage where I had no idea how to make any money. And I remember what that was like, and where I just had a knot in my stomach. And I'm thinking, like, you know, how am I gonna pay myself, let alone pay other people? But if the business is in good shape, then if I'm feeling tense all the time, that's really undercutting the experience of my life. And I noticed that my policy toward due dates was adding quite a bit of tension to the process of my life, because I would have, you know, I would prepare a speech pretty near when the speech was due. And then if some difficulty came up, then I would have to work extra. And in any case, there was a certain kind of tension to that process. By the way, if you hear any background noise today, I mentioned a few episodes ago, I have a new puppy named Sherlock, and Sherlock is making a few noises. We might have to move him out of the room. He is still very cute. He's usually very quiet, but maybe he wants some attention right now. So I guess we're going to have to move him out of the room. So Sherlock had to go. I thought that he would be quiet and really have rapt attention during the show, but I guess he had other priorities. So as I was saying, there was just more tension than I liked. And then particularly when something was harder than I had anticipated, which has to happen sometimes, then it would really creep into other things in my schedule. And one thing I noticed was that the more I was scheduling things at the last minute, the more it interfered with serendipitous opportunities in other areas of life. So for example, if I'm working on my book and I'm on a roll, and then I know, okay, well, I need to spend X amount of hours preparing a speech or doing some consulting, I'm going to do that speaking or consulting, because that's my obligation and that's what I've committed to clients to do. But it might interrupt a really enjoyable creative process, and sometimes those processes can be hard to recreate. Or even sometimes it's just a really nice day and I want to go in the water. I want to do something else besides the work. And one thing that's nice about, you know, about being at a certain level of value in the market is just the ability to have a little bit more flexibility. And so I would notice, oh yeah, well, if I just stacked all of these things on one day, then I wouldn't have that ability to go take a walk or go take a swim or go take a one-wheel ride. And, you know, it's not always, even in Laguna Beach, it's not always a super nice day. So there are just certain kinds of opportunities that I felt, whether it's creative opportunities or recreation opportunities, rejuvenation opportunities, that I wouldn't be having in addition to this additional tension. And then I also noticed that I would sometimes feel reactive with projects, because if I was slotting them until the end, I would be doing the, it wasn't exactly reactive, but I would be doing things that were just very much within my comfort zone that I had confidence in, and I wouldn't be as inclined to try new and creative ideas. Now, in many ways, that's good, particularly when with a lot of client situations, I'm charging by the hour, and so I want to focus on things that I really know are going to be high ROI. But as I'll mention in a minute, when I leave myself more time to do things, I will figure out things in the background. And I notice that, say, with my book or even with topics on this show, sometimes my biggest insights will be not when I'm on the clock, but just when I'm mulling things over, knowing that I have plenty of time to think about them and I'm not in a rush. So I mentioned once on this show, on my 38th birthday, I really was, which was almost, Jesus, almost 10 and a half months ago, a little over 10 and a half months ago, because my birthday is August 1st. And I've just thought a lot about this year, about how to make my creation, my productivity, as enjoyable as possible. And a couple months ago, I started thinking about this idea of reverse procrastination, which is a term that I got from a friend of mine whom I happened to be visiting a couple months ago. And he's really a master of reverse procrastination. So procrastination is putting things to the last minute, and reverse procrastination is basically putting things till the first minute. So what he's done, I would give him credit, but I don't know if he wants to be named, but I'll say is a friend in software. And what he's been really good at doing for years and years and years, he's a very, very talented software engineer. And what he'll do is he'll get a project that's an ambitious project, but he's so good that he can do the project way ahead of schedule in much less time than it takes other people. And so what he'll do is he'll agree to a deadline that someone will be totally happy with. And then he'll just do the project at the front end or very near the front end, get it done in a fraction of the time it's supposed to take. And I should say my version of this will be a little bit different, particularly if I'm billing people by the hour. I still have to charge by the hour. And that's actually an argument for sometimes not billing by the hour. But in any case, I'll just give you his method and then mine. He's focused on doing the thing to a really high level that the client will be thrilled about, but he'll do it super, super early, and then he'll deliver it a little bit early. And then in the meantime, he can do whatever he wants. So if he wants to, and he has lots and lots of different kinds of activities that he likes, and it just has a huge amount of what we can call time choice. He can do with his time what he wants. And he told me once, I treat my free time like gold, and he does that, but he also creates a lot of free time. And I asked him a little bit about this concept when I visited him. And one point he made to me is that it works well to do reverse procrastination, particularly when you're good at taking on projects that are well within your ability. Because when you're doing something that's well within your ability, then there's a real opportunity to make it a lot faster. Whereas if you're doing something that's at the total edge of your ability, it's hard to reverse procrastinate on because you don't even know what's involved in it. And it's going to involve all sorts of learning. If you want more on this aspect of it, listen to the several episodes I did on the idea of 80%, doing work to 80% of potential, because that's going to be key to reverse procrastination and to high productivity in many contexts besides reverse procrastination. So after this talk, I was reflecting on it, and I just thought, you know what? I want to try with my professional obligations. I want to always be at least several days ahead. And part of that I knew is doing this 80%, which, to summarize, it means that instead of trying to do a project by myself to 100% of my potential, I try to start off with an iteration that feels like 80% of my potential. And for the reasons I give in the different episodes, that ends up being a lot more efficient, in part because I can then delegate the project more easily to other people. And then also if I want the project to be better, I can revisit it myself. But once I've engaged in it to that 80% level, I will be much wiser and I will actually be able to do it much better than my original conception of 100%. So I started doing this and it's been really, really interesting in ways that I think might be useful, might be interesting to this audience. So one thing I've noticed is that with my projects themselves, whether speaking or consulting, my level of creativity has gone up significantly. And I've prided myself on doing good work in those areas in general, but I feel like now I'm doing better work. And it's because I'm having more relaxed insights about the project. So I'll give an example, just schematically, since I don't talk about client names, but I'm working on some messaging for a client on a particular policy issue. And when I do it well in advance of the deadline, then I have a couple of options. One is I can get more of my team's help with it, but also I can, once I do it, there's a certain relaxation that comes over me because I think, okay, well, I've got a good version now, so I don't have to do too much more to make it any better. But I can think about it casually. And then sometimes I'll think, this could be way better. And there's a lot of, it's a really liberated feeling because I'm already winning. I already know, okay, I've got a good version of this. So that pressure is off. So all it is now, oh, wow, what if I did this? And it's this kind of questioning, which leads to a lot of creativity where one thinks, oh, what about this? What about this? What about this? And that often, that mode of really curiosity often leads to a lot of the greatest creative breakthroughs. A good resource on this, by the way, is a speech by Johnny Ive, which he gave to, we'll have to look it up. But if you look up Johnny Ive's speech, J-O-N-Y, the Apple guy, there aren't that many speeches of his. I believe it's at the Stephen Hawking. If you look up Johnny Ive, Stephen Hawking, he got some Stephen Hawking award, and he gave a speech and he talks about some of the challenges in creativity balancing or at least harmonizing creativity with aggressive deadline focus and more broadly execution. So another thing I noticed in addition to I'm becoming more creative is that the process is a lot more relaxed and enjoyable. And some things where I would think, oh yeah, I don't like this part of the project as much, I would notice, oh wow, when I did it 6 days earlier, it was a lot more enjoyable because I could just relax during that time and I could savor it in a sense. Now in a minute I'll talk about how do you make sure you don't just procrastinate during the reverse procrastination. That can be a challenge, but I for various reasons I'll explain, I didn't really find that. But I did find, yeah, I'm more relaxed when I'm doing it this way, and that just is improving the quality of my experience. And then I've definitely noticed more time choice. So when I'm ahead of the game all the time on projects, then I get to choose, oh, if I want to work longer on the book, I can do that. Or if it's a really nice day and I want to shift my calendar around, I can do that. Versus if it's the last minute, then I have to do the thing at the last minute just to fulfill my obligations. There's a pretty good analogy here to money. And in money, with money and business, there's this idea, and I think Bill Gates is somebody who at least semi-popularized this, where he'll talk about how when he started Microsoft early on, and once he started employing these people, he had this feeling of, oh my gosh, what if this doesn't work and all these people are depending on me? And so he just decided, I'll have a year's worth of cash in the bank, where even if we didn't get any revenue at all, we would be totally set. We'd be totally okay. And somebody who likes this example is a guy I'm a fan of named Sam Ovens, who's a really good, he runs consulting.com, and I think he has a really good system for entrepreneurs, particularly consultants, to get started in that business and to get good in that business. And he talks a lot about this, how once you've got that year of cash in the bank, you start thinking long-term in a totally different way. And I think this is, it's related because what money is doing is it's buying you the time. I mean, it's buying you time choice. Maybe there's a better term for that, but that's what I'm currently using. And similarly, reverse procrastination, what it does is it gives you, you're buying your time. You now have much more choice over your time versus having this exact commitment that the schedule has set up. And I know a lot of people who have plenty of money, but they bind themselves so that they have very, very little time choice, which I think is a shame, because one of the great things that you can have with money is more and more choice over how you spend your time, what activities you do, and when you do them. So I've really found this to be good, and particularly doing it with these things where I have obligations. Now, one question that might come up is motivation, because I mentioned that deadlines have certain motivational benefits. So will I be motivated without deadlines if I'm reverse procrastinating? And I think part of this question is a misconception, because you can still set deadlines for reverse procrastinating. They're just way, way earlier. So you can say, okay, well, my internal deadline for this is X. And then you might think, oh, well, that's not as good as a deadline for someone else. I'm not going to have the same commitment. And there's something to that. But I found that one thing that's really helpful in setting these kinds of deadlines is I want to develop a certain sensitivity toward when I'm ahead of the game and when I'm constrained. So when I'm ahead of the game and I have time choice versus when I'm feeling constrained, like, oh, I have to do this in this moment because I have this absolute obligation. And I am cultivating the feeling of really liking being ahead of the game and really disliking being constrained. And I think there's probably a whole show on how to cultivate certain feelings and how that can be beneficial. But this particular one, I find it beneficial to really have a lust for, oh yeah, I'm totally ahead of the game, I can do what I want, versus feeling like, oh no, I have to do this at this hour. No matter what else I want to do, I've committed myself to doing this at this hour. I want to avoid that unless it's something that I really, really want. One interesting topic, by the way, that's somewhat related to this is with meetings. It's always really interesting to notice how one feels when a meeting is canceled. And sometimes I know people have the feeling of, oh, I love it when people cancel meetings. And sometimes I have that. And I think it's a really good test to know whether the meeting was a good idea, whether it's really a good idea to constrain my time that way, with if I would be happy if the person canceled it. And there was a meeting this week where someone said, oh, well, we can cancel if you want. And I thought, no, do not cancel. I really, really want to have that meeting at that time. And that was a good meeting. Whereas other times people cancel and I'll feel like Larry David, who has this, I think it's on Curb Your Enthusiasm, but if you look up Larry David cancel or cancellation on Google, there are some memes where he just says, I think it might have actually been on a talk show. He'll just say, like, cancel anytime with me. No excuse. You don't have to give any reasons. I'm just totally thrilled. You know, I'll go do what I want. So there is some, I think, relationship between that and what we've been talking about so far. Now, one other thing about motivation. So one aspect of motivation is continue to have deadlines. But another thing to notice about motivation is that the best kind of motivation is motivation where we're really fascinated and absorbed by something. And often this will happen with people with their hobbies, where they'll get down, they might call it a rabbit hole or whatever they call it. It's this feeling of, oh, I'm just totally absorbed and I want to do this and I want to see it through. Sometimes people feel this way with video games, which can have its own pathology to it, but it's an interesting kind of experience where they just are in this mode where they want to keep making progress and keep making progress and keep making progress. And I find that with the things I'm most interested in, that will happen. There will be times when I'm just totally fascinated by something and I just want to keep pushing it and keep pushing it and keep pushing it. And I want to make sure that in life, that when I have those times when I'm feeling that way and it's a good activity, that I want to do that. But also, I want to set my life up such that I can at least try to do that whenever I want. And if I find that, oh, well, there aren't that many activities that are going to have that effect, then I can look for new activities. But it's the best case scenario, I think, is to have a lot of time where we can really pursue things that we're fascinated by versus being so driven by, oh, this deadline to another person is really the only thing that's getting me out of bed in the morning to do this, or at least the only thing that's getting me to do this instead of going on Facebook. An example of somebody whom I think has a pretty good setup here is Thomas Sowell, who's a really interesting author who influenced me a lot, particularly when I was younger. And he talked about, he has an essay which is titled something like Some Thoughts on Writing. And he, in that essay, he talks about he doesn't have deadlines with publishers. What he does is he just has a couple of book projects that he's working on, and then sometimes he'll get bored with one or he'll get stalled, and then he'll just pick up another one. And over time, he's interested in enough stuff where he's turned out dozens of books. So he's done a lot, but he'll just say to his agent, hey, guess what? I finished this book. And he mentioned with one of his books called Basic Economics, I think it took him decades to do, but he ended up doing it. And overall, his throughput, we could call it, is pretty high. So whether that's the best mode for any given one of us, there's a lesson there in that one can do a lot of work when one is fascinated and in that kind of mode. And I definitely find that more enjoyable. One final thought on reverse procrastination is that a broader idea that I've been referencing in different ways today is having a sensitivity for the quality of the time of our life. Our life, in a sense, just consists of time. So I've talked about having choice over it, which is very related to the quality of it. And I find that when we're setting goals and pursuing goals, which is great, is a great kind of thing to do, and I think necessary to flourish in life, but I think it's the goals should be set and pursued in such a way that the experience of pursuing them is largely enjoyable and fulfilling, not having this mode of, okay, well, I'm moving toward the next goal and I'm not really even thinking about the present at all, but I'm just thinking about the future, because what is that going to be like? Like, we're never going to be at all of our goals. It's good to have goals. It's good to have new goals all the time. But it's only good if the process of doing that is really enjoyable. So this is one thing where I really enjoy the more reverse procrastination is the kind of thing that gives me a lot more enjoyment of the productive process. And that's one thing I'm always looking for on this show, is how do we enjoy the productive process more? Because production it's essential to our lives. Human beings need to produce the values that we need to flourish, but it's the process itself is also a value, or can be a huge value. So when I think about human flourishing, that productive process is something that I'm very interested in. And I called today's episode The Joy of Reverse Procrastination, in part because some friends of mine, Dan Sullivan and Dean Jackson, have a podcast called The Joy of Procrastination, which is really interesting. They have some interesting perspectives on procrastination. But at the moment, I'm very focused on the joy of reverse procrastination. And I'm very interested in hearing from all of you. Do you have any tips on reverse procrastination? This is something I'm pretty new to. It's very, very promising from my own experience and from the others that I've witnessed who do this. It seems to be pretty rare. So any tips that you have on reverse procrastination, I am interested in. One place to share those tips could be our Facebook page. So facebook.com/humanflourishingproject. You can also share them with me individually at alex@alexepstein.com, as well as I usually say, any questions, comments, love mail, or hate mail. And to subscribe to regular updates on the show, including to know when the latest episodes come out, go to humanflourishingproject.com. Okay, I hope you all have a great week full of lots of reverse procrastination and lots of time choice. I will talk to you on the next episode. Until then, I'm Alex Epstein. This has been the Human Flourishing Project.